Greetings, and welcome to the third episode of the Pinstripe Alley Podcast, the podcast made by fans, for fans, really for us, though. Today, we actually have actual baseball to discuss, as spring training games have actually begun. Hooray. But first, I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, of course. Hopefully, they will be providing me with healing powers, as I'm not feeling well right now. So, what would Jeter do? Lord Duggan? Are you going to help me feel better?
Gonna try.
No,
I didn't think so. Thank you, though, Waffles.
You're welcome.
I appreciate this. So, what did it feel good to see some baseball this week?
Always good, yeah.
Yeah, finally. I said I called last podcast that we should crush the college team, and we did. So that made me happy.
Very perceptive.
I think the odds were in my favor, but no one needs
South
to know that.
South Florida, you're less good than the Yankees.
Shockingly, they're not quite as good as the New York Yankees. All right, so let's get right into the first segment, which, of course, is This Week in Pinstripes. I guess, obviously, the biggest news, baseball is back, and we can discuss the... I don't know if we want to discuss the game against South Florida, but... I mean, we could talk about the two games against the Phillies. So, Waffles, what did you think?
Well, the offense was certainly good. It was, you know, both games have been really windy, so I don't know if you can really judge how awful the defense has sort of looked.
But we shouldn't.
You can, but, I mean... It is really
to judge people.
Of course.
It's really done a number on the defenders so far.
Yeah, they look like lost out there sometimes. It's like amazing how windy it was. I remember them showing the flags and it was just all over the place.
Yeah.
But you're right though, the offense has been pretty stellar so far. Duggan, what did you think of the games?
Well, I was kind of surprised by even things that you wouldn't think would be so affected by the wind, just, you know, butchering ground balls and just kind of shoddy defense all around. But, I mean, it is not only spring training, but the beginning of spring training, so that can kind of be expected. But, I mean, the Phillies had, what, like 7 misplays in the field today?
Yeah, it was. Today was real bad.
Yeah.
They had 4 errors, I think.
And at least a couple where it was like, it should have been a double play, but they booted it, so they just got one out, so it wasn't charged an error.
Yet that one drop pass by Colin Curtis, which was clearly like
how
knocked
was
off
that
his
not an
dunk.
Error? It was a clear error.
Yeah, blatant. I mean, and I got what was it, Corey Wade at the time? He was pitching?
Yeah.
He didn't deserve that run. That's a shame. But, yeah, what did you think of some of the minor players you saw out there? Waffles?
David Phelps looked good. I thought he was pretty impressive. Cesar Cabral
was
pretty good.
Yeah, I liked what I saw from him.
As far as minor league hitters go, Cole Garner was... good. I don't really know.
Zoilo.
Yeah, he was good.
What? Which one?
Almonte.
Oh, how do you pronounce his first name? I'm just calling him Zoilo.
Zoilo.
Zoilo. Am I still pronouncing that wrong?
No, I think it's
no, you got it.
Okay. Zoilo. I'll have to practice that, because I do actually enjoy his name, and as we all know, that's pretty much my criteria for whether or not I think you should be on the Yankees, if you have a fun, silly name. But how about some of the
who's that guy that we got from the Pirates who has the fantastic name?
Oh, you're gonna
you
have
remember?
To, yeah.
Oh,
I,
gosh.
In my current six state, I can't remember, but...
Isn't it, like, X something?
Well, one of you looked that up.
I'm on it. I'm looking things up on the internet as my specialty.
Good work, Duggan. Good work.
Thanks.
And while Duggan looks that up, Waffles, what did you think of some of the big hitters out there?
Well, Tex didn't bunt yet.
I was impressed by that.
So that's a positive aspect. I expected him to at least try to get that going, but I'm glad that he didn't. Granderson was really good yesterday.
Yeah, he was pretty phenomenal.
A-Rod was good today.
Yeah, first pitch off of Roy Halladay. Opposite field home run. That's impressive.
Right.
Hopefully he's coming back, and he's coming back strong.
Ex-Ricardo Quiñones.
There you go.
There you go. And it was X-something.
Thank you, Duggan. But Duggan, what did you think of some of the big league hitters today?
Well, like you said, A-Rod definitely looked great. Good swings and, you know, but I will say, everything that he hit was right down the middle. So, I mean, you can't be throwing those pitches to Alex Rodriguez, but he really didn't miss them. Like, he hit some very hard balls.
I think when he was sick, you could throw those pitches down the middle and he wouldn't hit them. So I think this is hopefully at least a sign that he is indeed healthy and getting better.
Yeah.
Well, the knee thing kind of just took all of his power away. So even if he hit something, it kind of ended up being a fly ball that an outfielder caught.
Yeah, very true. I guess we discussed offense, but what about the pitching? Did you, Waffles, did you see anything you liked from some of the pitchers out there?
Well, like I said, I was impressed with David Phelps.
Yeah, he looked promising. I really think he's probably major league ready. Just, it's hard to find a spot for him on the Yankees.
I think he definitely is, and I think that, you know, any other team he would probably, well, not any other team, but most other teams he would be starting for. At least as, you know, a 4 or 5 starter.
I think the Red Sox would start him at this point.
Probably so.
Yeah.
But he had really good movement on his pitches, and I thought he did well.
Who was that other one? Mitchell?
DJ Mitchell.
Yeah, DJ Mitchell.
He looked all right.
He's from North Carolina. I like him.
Oh, there you go. Should we judge him on his looks? The Waffles shallow eater?
He's not that cute.
Okay. Well, so the North Carolina-ness gets him over the not-that-cute hump.
Yeah.
Good to know. Duggan, any players you found cute out there?
Every one of them.
All right. Want to go to that locker room.
Oh.
Oh, my. Oh,
yeah. Wow, still sick and I can crack jokes. Go me.
Oh, goodness.
I know.
I think you have been going to that locker room then.
Well, I've been in locker rooms before. I can tell. When I was interning in 2000. I can honestly say I've seen A-Rod's ass. And it's spectacular.
I think Roy Halladay's seen it too after today.
He sure has. In all of his Centaurian glory. All right. Anything else Yankee related anyone wanted to discuss? Duggan?
I thought Nova looked pretty good outside of, one bad pitch to Hunter Pence, falling behind him, throwing him a 3-0 fastball. I thought he pitched well. He had a really heavy fastball, which is great for this early in the year. For him to be throwing a ball that sinks that much was encouraging.
Yeah,
but Nova's really frustrating because his pitches tend to either be beautiful or terrible. They tend to either be, you know, a bowling ball sinker that no one can hit, or he flies open and it sails away from him and it's a bad pitch. You know?
Yeah, very true. I'm really rooting for him this year. I'm hoping he has a good sophomore year with the Yankees. He's probably the pitcher, like, unless Phil Hughes makes the number 5 spot, he's probably the pitcher I'll be watching the most. I assume most people will be Pineda, which, for obvious reasons, but for me it'll still be Nova.
I think he's going to have a good year. I mean, really, I think that when he really does, even though he doesn't have a lot of strikeouts or like a really impressive breaking ball or anything, I think he really does have good stuff. And I think that with some more polish and with just limiting those, because he throws so many fastballs that stay up in the zone that are just really, they're not good pitches. But when he does throw his good pitches, he's almost unhittable.
Yeah, when he throws his good pitches, from what I've seen, he really likes to challenge batters. He's like, go ahead, hit it if you can, which I appreciate. I'm a big fan of that. Because that was one of the problems, I think, with Java, where, you know, you knew exactly what was coming. He tried to blaze two fastballs by you, and then cutter, or slider, one of the two.
Yeah, with two strikes, you just go for the slider in the dirt.
Yeah, it was immediately a 3-2 count.
Yep. Pitching to contact is definitely a skill, and it's definitely an asset for a pitcher. And Nova does do it well. When he's going well, he's not going to get a ton of strikeouts, but he's going to be in the zone. He's not going to walk anyone. He's going to keep his pitch count down and go deep in the game, which is huge.
Nova's kind of getting the Phil Hughes from last year treatment. You know, he's only pitched one game, and the announcers have already said, like, 20 times, you know, 16-game winner, Ivan Nova, 16-game winner. That's going to get old.
Yes. Really fast. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, 16-4 is certainly not a fair representation of how he pitched last season. But I do think he pitched well, but 16-4 is definitely going to let people get carried away.
Yeah.
It's just not something that they should, you know, continuously, like, beat into the ground, because as we saw with Hughes, it meant nothing. You know, Hughes was not great when he won 18 games. And so, you know, spending the entire next year talking about how he won 18 games was kind of a misrepresentation.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Vasquez could have won that many games for the Yankees if he got as much run support as Hughes did, because Hughes got a lot of run support, if I remember correctly.
He did.
He definitely did.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, there are games I remember, like Vasquez, he pitched really well, and the Yankees didn't score for him. I've always called this, at some point, like the Jimmy Key syndrome, because I remember Jimmy Key used to pitch like that in games back in the 90s, and some games he just didn't get any run support.
Vasquez really had an interesting year. I mean, at the beginning of the season, he was a disaster, but then in the middle of the season, he was as good as CeCe or the best pitcher on the Yankees. For about a month or a month and a half, he was really fantastic. And then he just went to complete garbage again.
Yeah.
When his arm died.
Yeah.
But, alright. Anything else on the Yankees side we want to discuss? Waffles?
I think that's it.
Duggan?
I am good.
Alright. Let's move on to This Week in Baseball. And I guess we'll get to the big news later, because I'm sick and I don't feel like being quite incoherent yet, like I intend to be, but...
I hate Bud Selig!
Yes, so do I. I was like, burn him in chicken fire!
That's coming, so just wait.
Did you happen to catch, like, some of the other games or recaps of other games in baseball this weekend?
Well, A.J. Burnett kind of dying.
Yeah.
Was big.
I'll tell you, I thought it was really nice of Yes to not only show the one replay of him punting the ball in his eye, but the really up-close one.
Ugh, that was terrible.
I know, I was like, alright, we got the gist from the first one. I don't think we need that graphic of detail.
I saw it on Twitter, and someone was like, if you are easily squicked out, don't click this link. And I was like, well, that's me, so I'm not clicking. And then, Yes, so kindly showed it to me anyway.
You're easily squicked out?
Yeah, by that kind of thing, ugh.
Duggan, are you easily squicked out?
Absolutely not.
No. I'll watch anything. That's what the internet has done to me, really. It's made me where I can literally watch absolutely anything.
I don't do blood at all.
Well, that's why you're a lawyer, not a doctor.
This is true.
I couldn't be a doctor.
Neither could I.
And Duggan is an engineer. Again, yeah. I keep wanting to call you Scotty.
We'll see how she holds together, sir.
That's... You know what? If we keep doing that, we're going to have so much fun on this podcast, I can tell you that. But one thing I thought was interesting, I loved the tweet I saw today where finally Miguel Cabrera got a ball hit to him at third base. And he booted it. Yeah. I mean, I understand it's still, you know, the beginning of spring training. So, like you said, like, these are bound to happen. But still, yeah, he inspired, I think he literally inspires zero confidence at third.
I don't think it'll be the last, certainly.
No.
I think he'll do okay on the balls hit to him. I don't think he'll have a huge error total. I think if you hit the ball to Miguel Cabrera, he'll probably field it and probably throw it. But I think he's going to cover a postage stamp because he's fat.
Good one.
Yeah.
Good one. All right. No, I agree. I mean, I think his range is almost non-existent except for the one he uses to grill food. It's going to be a comedy of errors, like I said on the forum. And I would love to see, like, him and Fielder switch it up, and he goes to first and Fielder goes to third.
Oh, yeah, let Fielder play third? That'd be even better.
Let's just have fun.
I mean,
yeah,
wouldn't it be better for them to let one of them play first base and DH the other one? I mean, this isn't the National League. You don't have to play both of them in the field.
I assume they're going to do that some games. But
I'm sure they're going to do that at some point. And eventually, you know, a few years from now, I don't think they're going to have any choice. But I think they want to stave off doing that as long as they can, but it is going to be inevitable that that's going to be what's going to happen.
I feel like that's just going to hurt them defensively to insist that Cabrera play third.
And one thing that's going to be interesting, like, imagine, like, close games down the line and at, like, seventh or eighth inning. You know they're going to want to bring in, like, a replacement defensive third baseman, but how do you possibly take Miguel Cabrera's bat out of the lineup?
I don't really understand what that's accomplishing, because you can get both of them in the lineup without putting one of them at third base. I don't really get it.
Yeah, no.
Do they have anyone in the minors who's any kind of third base prospect? Because Brandon Inge was a disaster last year, which I think could be a contributing factor.
It's possible.
I know almost nothing about their farm system aside from pitching.
Yeah.
Yeah, same here. I don't know anything about the Tigers farm system.
Well, that makes three of us who don't know anything, so.
All right.
They have some decent pitching prospects.
That should inspire you.
Oh, yes. Well, this is a Yankee podcast.
Yeah. We're not paid to know about the Tigers farm system.
We're not paid.
That's true.
But I thought that another interesting fact was that one pitcher for the Braves,
who gave up six dingers?
Yeah. He gave up six hits, and all of them were home runs.
Yeah, that's quite something.
And the Braves got one hit the day before, so that's just, like, a disaster.
I know. I'll say this. That's going to be one thing that's going to challenge the Braves in the NL East. They have to pick their offense up, because that was a real problem last year.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Their pitching's going to be great for years.
Oh, yeah.
That kid's going to be fine, but it's just kind of amusing that in his first game of spring training, he gives up more home runs than he gave up in over 100 innings last season.
Dingers.
But gave up a lot of dingers.
But I suppose we should get to the big news. Ugh. Anyway,
I know that you hate to do this.
Yes. But as we mentioned, and many a time on the forum and everywhere, Bud Selig has decided that a year, he couldn't wait a year, and that 2012 was going to be the beginning of expanded playoffs and the new one-game wildcard elimination deathmatch, which I find to be an abomination. But, I mean, I mean, just some personal info. If you read my article on Monday, I was never a fan of the original wild card. Actually, I don't think I wrote that article on Monday. It was sometime during the week. But I was never a fan of the original wild card because I immediately thought, yeah, it was going to probably create a lesser need to win the divisions. And, I mean, I remember why they did it. They did it because, like, the 93 Giants didn't make the playoffs when they had the second-best record in the majors at the time by a significant amount. and they lost to the Braves by one game. So they wanted to make it where teams like that would be allowed in, but like I said in my article, then I think getting rid of divisions would have been a much better answer than the wild card, because you still punish that Giants team. And, like, under this system, that Giants team would now have to face an 85 Cardinals team for a one-game elimination. I just find that to be an abomination. Waffles, what are your thoughts?
Playoffs in baseball, and really most sports, are, well, I would say more in baseball, they're a crapshoot. They are an anything-can-happen type deal. And, you know, on one day, a really bad team can beat a really good team.
Oh, you could put the Astros against the Yankees, and the Astros, for that one game, have as much of a legitimate chance to win as the Yankees.
Exactly. So, I don't like the idea of, you know, having a 162-game season cut down to a winner-take-all one-game scenario. I think that kind of goes against everything baseball is about, because you play series during the regular season and you play series during the playoffs, and then all of a sudden we've decided that one game is enough. And I know that for most years there's not going to be a huge separation between the wild cards that have to play the one game playoff, but there could be. There could be, you know, a 5, 8 game, 10 game difference. And I think that's a lot. And I don't think that, you know, a team that is better by 8 games or 10 games should basically have an equal chance to move on as a team that, you know, is worse.
Yeah, no, I agree. Duggan, your thoughts?
I think it's putting out fire with gasoline. I'm not in favor of it at all. I mean, I think that it's taking a really minor problem and then, you know, instead of using a scalpel, they're using an axe. And I think that it's really not thought through very well. I mean, I agree that a one-game playoff really has no business in anything but a tiebreaker. I mean, it really, like she said, it goes completely against the 162-game season and the entire way baseball is formatted. I mean, and I feel like all of the arguments for it are really overstated, and I feel like that you're not really getting what you think that you're getting. I mean, I understand that the idea is now winning the divisions is important, but again, I don't see, because there's still going to be one wild card team in this round of four. It's just now potentially a worse wild card team. Instead of a second place team, it's the second best second place team, or even a third place team.
Yeah, so exactly.
Now, instead of once we get to that second round, when there's the four teams in each league, you have the same thing that you had before. This is no more pure, you know, only division winners, which is kind of stupid in general, because the three teams that win the three divisions are not necessarily the three best teams.
Yeah.
But I feel like the whole thing was kind of trumped up in, we're going to stop any team from potentially coasting and not trying as hard as they could to win the division.
Yeah,
to which I have to say, is this really that big of a problem? And is this the right way to solve that problem?
Do you really think that adding another wild card is going to keep the Tigers from coasting in the Central this season? Because it's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a 10-game lead in your division, you're going to coast.
Or like,
if you are out of contention, you're going to coast. You're just going to call people up. You're not going to go crazy trying to win games.
Like the Yankees in 98. I mean, they were pretty much done in August. So
yeah,
there was no chance the Red Sox could catch them. So why wouldn't they just coast? I mean,
They would.
Yeah, that's the one problem I have with this. Like, the Red Sox fought for the wild card that year, but, you know, the talk about incentive to win the division, they could have all the incentive in the world. They weren't winning the division that year. And now you're going to punish that team. And I'm all about punishing the Red Sox. But not like that. I think that's unfair to that team.
But here's the problem. It's designed so that it can stop a team if there is a close race like the Yankees and the Rays in 2010, that they would have to go balls to the wall to try to win the division instead of coasting. But if they could coast, what that meant was that they were so far ahead of the second-place wildcard team that they were in no danger of being caught, that they were clearly one of the top teams in the league. And now one of those teams is going to have to play a stupid one-game play-in team against a team who must be much worse, or else they wouldn't be able to coast.
Exactly. It's
like the Yankees could coast that year because they had the wild card lead by about 10 games.
And either way, it was a win-win situation because, you know, either they faced the Rangers for, you know, a five-game series in which they could have maybe beaten them, or if they faced the Twins, which is a much greater guaranteed win. So, I mean, and of course, they now made it where wild cards can play the division rivals. Why wasn't that implemented before? If you're going to do this sort of thing, why not have the wild card play the division rival? I mean, you could have had so
But many... if this rule was implemented in 2010, the Yankees and the Rays presumably would not have coasted at the end of the season. They would play out that last week of the season, and instead of ending up with something like 97 or 98 wins, they would have had, you know, 100 or 101. And then they would have had to play a team who was much, much worse. Whoever didn't end up winning the division would have had to play a one-game play-in against some 90-win team who wasn't a threat. That's why they were coasting, because the second wildcard team was not at all a threat to catch them.
Yeah, exactly.
So the only situation in which this whole thing has been trumped up to help is a team not caring about winning the division to now give them greater incentive. If that would actually apply, the solution is to have this team play a one-game playoff against a team who is much worse.
Yeah.
And that's stupid.
It's unfair. It's stupid. It punishes good teams.
Yeah.
I mean, go ahead, Waffles.
I'm sorry. Let's not pretend like the divisions are equal, because they just aren't. And I feel like this system kind of would be better. I mean, it sucks, but like, it would work better if the divisions were more fairly balanced. But, you know, like I said, the AL Central, barring complete disaster, that's going to the Tigers, and they're going to run away with it. So they're going to coast, and they're still going to be probably the weakest non-wild card. Maybe even, you know, probably the weakest non-wild card coming out of the American League. Because, you know, I think that the Yankees or the Rays or the Red Sox and the Angels or the Rangers will probably still be better. So, I don't really understand what this is accomplishing, except to add another team that has no business being in the playoffs
And that was always my original problem with the wild card. I felt it at, you know, because I mean, back before the three-division system, I liked the idea of divisions. I thought the playoffs were so simple and brilliant, where, you know, you place importance on divisions, fine, but, you know, I thought that added a nice sense of rivalry, a nice sense of accomplishment, you know, like that, for all we know, that 1993, you know, those games between the Braves and the Giants towards the end were, like, had a sense of urgency, and I think that's kind of cool. So, I mean, that's one reason to keep divisions, but I think they have to be even. Like, you can't do it in three, because you for me, you can't have it both ways. You can't place importance on winning the division, yet have a lesser team that didn't win the division have a chance to advance further. I don't think that's right. I think it's hypocritical.
Well, I think no matter how many teams you end up putting in the playoffs, all that it really does is shift around where the important games are. I mean, before, when there was not multiple rounds of the playoffs, it was just, you know, the tight, intense games were at the top. And sometimes a team would run away with it, and sometimes there'd be a tight race for that top spot. And now it's going to be a tight race for sometimes the division, sometimes for the first wild card, sometimes for the second wild card. And so I think when you add more teams to the playoffs, you know, some teams will make it easily, and then some teams will still be fighting for it. So, I mean, I don't think that you can necessarily say that it's going to be less dramatic, because I think wherever the last playoff spot is, I think there's a decent chance there's going to be teams fighting for it and, you know, on the edge of making it or not making it.
Yeah. No, I mean, one of my original... the other thing I never liked about the wild card is it made the playoffs longer. I was always a fan of a short playoff season, because, quite frankly, the season's long. I mean, it's 162 games played, and, you know, the season is long. I mean, if anyone plays, like, fantasy baseball or fantasy baseball versus fantasy football, you can easily see the difference in how taxing one is over the other. Like, with fantasy football, you have a week before you have to switch players around. Baseball has, you know, you pretty much have to do it every day. And that's what the season is like. So, you spend the entire season proving that you're the best, and you devalue that by, like you said, allowing an 85-win team a one-shot elimination match, and then an actual chance to beat a better team. I don't think that's right.
Do you know how much people are going to complain the first time that both wild cards come out of the same division?
Are you kidding? Do you know how much people are going to complain if the wild card game is blown by a bad call?
Oh, I know. But, I mean, say the Yankees win the division, the Rays win the first wild card, and the Red Sox win the second wild card, people will... Oh, goodness.
Yeah,
it'll be even worse when, like we're talking about, some, you know, if the Yankees win 95 games and they lose to an 85-win Angels team, then people are going to be less happy with this system. I mean, we're kind of giving this doom and gloom worst-case scenario. I'm sure it'll work out fairly, a fair amount of the time, where no one will get... I mean, this definitely leaves the door open for people to get screwed over in a way that's kind of unnecessary. But, I mean, a good amount of the time, it will work out sort of fairly. But I just feel like all of the issues that this was created to kind of solve, it doesn't do a very good job of addressing them. And just in addition to not really addressing the issues, it brings a whole new bunch of issues into the mix. So I just feel like it was kind of half-baked, and that it seems like a good idea in that, you know, teams not trying to win the division is stupid. Teams should try to win the division. So we'll do this thing to stop that from happening, but it's kind of a bad way to do that.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I disagree with the fact that they think the Yankees weren't trying to win games in 2010. They may have been coasting, but a team's not out there to intentionally lose. I mean, they weren't, like, dropping balls or, you know, not trying to hit. Yeah, they
were just marching out Mitre and Proctor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and mind you, they have no place in baseball, but, you know, it's understandable. You give your star players a rest, but you still try to win. I mean, otherwise, why put players out there?
And really, is that so terrible? Like, I mean, it happens kind of all the time. It's just teams, if they have a big lead in the division or if they're not contending, they don't try their hardest to win. They, you know, send out prospects and they give guys experience and they give guys rest. And it happens every year, no matter what.
Is it
so much of a disaster if a really good team has a playoff spot firmly in hand and they coast? Like, is that really the end of the world where we need to do this? I would say that it's not.
And that's another thing I like. I like seeing prospects at the end of the year. If the Yankees have a chance to coast and, you know, show out some prospects, good. You know, give the youngsters a chance to play. But, yeah. I mean, one thing I just don't understand is, why couldn't this wait a year?
Money.
It could really wait forever.
No, I mean, obviously, Waffles, the whole thing is about money. But
yeah. It is... And you can see why they did it, and I'm sure it will be fun and exciting in a kind of March Madness kind of way for those people who are into that kind of thing, which is like, hey, you know, one really exciting game and winner takes all, and they'll put it on Fox at, you know, 8:07 p.m., and it'll be really exciting for everybody. And
yeah,
well, except doing it this year, importantly, for some reason, they had to make it to where the higher seeded
team. Oh, yeah, the 2-3 playoff thing?
Yeah, starts on the road. So, technically, the better team could end up coming home down 0-2.
Or they could come home up 2-0, win the third game, and, you know, they'd only see one game of this whole series.
Yeah.
The winning team, you know. I don't know. I just find the whole thing despicable.
Why couldn't he spend his time working on replay? I'm just going to say it. Like, why is it when Bud Selig lays down at night and dreams up all these weird new rule changes that he can't be like, hey, you know what's really bad about baseball? The umpires are incompetent.
Yeah, I mean, I have an article going up before this podcast will be, you know, posted. Oh, kind of creepy, but
it has to be in every podcast.
I've now gotten one into every podcast. Yeah.
So far, yes, I appreciate it, but I have an article going up again before this podcast is posted about how, you know, I posted three different teams that have different, you know, were challenge systems: football, tennis, and lacrosse. And, you know, they have pretty decent replay systems, and, you know, why couldn't baseball adopt some of them? There's no reason not to. You could have a
baseball favorite. it would even be easier. I mean,
yeah,
safe versus out, catch versus trap, those things. I mean, you look at one still photograph and you can see very definitively, you know, there's not a lot of shade of gray in a lot of baseball calls. They're very cut and dry.
It makes the game too long. Managers arguing for an hour is better.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it would have ended that perfect game, or the fake perfect game that, what was it, Galarraga?
Galarraga, yeah.
Yeah, that he pitched and the call was blown. If he had a challenge system, you know, everyone walks away from that a winner. Jim, you know, what's Jim Joyce going to do? Complain? Once he sees it's
right. Even easier is you just have a replay official who just sits there watching video the whole time, and when there's a questionable play, they can appeal to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
You know, there are numerous ways it could be done, and they just don't want to.
I have some breaking non-Yankee news.
Oh, what's that?
The Pirates have just extended Andrew McCutchen for 6 years and $51.5 million with a club option for the seventh year for $14.75 million.
Wow.
That's really fantastic.
Good for them.
Yeah.
I like McCutchen. He's one of my favorite players to watch.
He's great.
And I, again, like, my whole philosophy on team superstars, and I think McCutchen is definitely theirs, and good for the Pirates. You know, lock him up right now.
And $9 million a year, that's such a steal.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible.
Good job, you know. Good job, Pirates. Sorry about AJ.
Well, I think having McCutchen kind of helps the loss of AJ Burnett a little bit.
Slightly, yes.
McCutchen's fantastic, though. He's so great to watch.
Oh, yeah. He's got such a nice swing, good defense. Yeah, just an all-around good player.
Walks a lot.
Yeah. I know you love walks.
I do.
You know what I love? Box. I love...
Do you have your t-shirt yet?
No, I don't. I still need to get it, make it, whatever, because, again, I just love going to a game and yelling out balk. It's one of my favorite things to do in sports.
I always love when a game ends with a balk, when it's a balk-off, when there's a runner on third, is the game-winning one, and then there's a balk to end the game. That's always pretty classic.
That's pretty hilarious. You know, in research for my article, I watched that Braves-Pirates game again, the one with the blown call.
Oh, that was terrible.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Whenever I see it, I immediately think of that scene in The Naked Gun where Frank Drebin is trying to keep the game going longer. So the guy is sliding into home. Catcher gets the ball, tags him. The runner is, like, so far away from the plate. Like, he tagged him just so far away from home plate. And Drebin called him safe, and the catcher went nuts. I love that scene. You ever seen The Naked Gun, Waffles?
No.
No. Duggan?
Nope.
Wow, you two need to watch that movie. That is a classic. There's nothing quite like Leslie Nielsen deadpan delivery humor. It's really out of this world. But
I have seen the famous scene of them calling the strikes.
Oh yeah, that's one of my favorite gifs when he's just dancing after the third strike. Uh-huh. I think baseball needs more of that.
Get on it, C-League.
Stop wasting our time with this extra wild card stuff. And then expanded interleague next year. Oh my god. Oh my god. That's not even the sickness talking. That's just actual. I'm just disgusted. See, that made you sick. You're coughing. Well, I think it's time to get to our next and new segment, our Yankee of the Week. This is a segment that, you know, we judge the games that were played and decide who our best player was of the week, our best Yankee, as it were. I'll start off. Mine was Curtis Granderson, the Grandy Man, if you will. Again, nothing says confidence like just coming back and hitting the ball like you never forgot how from last year. You know, because a lot of people are expecting them to have, like, a regressive year. But I'm really hoping he doesn't. I hope with his swing he continues exactly what he did last year. And the spring training at-bats were definitely a sign of that, I think. Waffles, your Yankee of the Week?
I picked Alex Rodriguez.
Good choice.
Because he had such a rough year last year. And there are a lot of people who thought that he was basically done. And he really couldn't have looked better today. So, I picked him.
All right. Duggan, your Yankee of the Week?
I'll take David Phelps. I thought he pitched really beautifully. Two clean innings, and he threw a lot of quality pitches. You know, not just that he threw two innings and didn't give up any runs. His fastball looked sharp. His command looked good. He was hitting the glove. You know, pretty impressive outing. So, he's my man.
Very nice. All right. And now on for the other part of this segment, our Mitre of the Week. That's right, our worst Yankee player of the week. The one we think just Mitre'd it up and did nothing.
Carhorn.
Oh, I'm too sick. I would, but I'm too sick.
Cry me a river.
There you go. The Mitre of the Week. Hey, I did it. Good for me. My Mitre of the Week is Chris Dickerson. And you know how I love this man's name because, again, his last name is Schlongerson, as far as I'm concerned. But he just...
Wait, I don't really get that. Can you explain that one more time?
You know, because the first part of his name is, you know, Dickerson.
Right.
And, you know, there are other terms for the word, you know, Dick. Like Richard.
Like Richard?
Yes.
Oh, right.
Like Richard. But anyway, like, they're talking about him replacing Swisher and... he's in no condition to do that at all. And, I kind of liked him last year. I liked a little bit of what I saw, but he can't replace Swisher, you know. I agree with what Jedi said in the forums. I say get Dominic Brown. But, yeah, Dickerson
just get him.
Yeah.
Hey, Dom Brown. Come on over here and be a Yankee, Dom Brown.
Wear the pinstripes of pride.
Throw him in a bag tomorrow and just...
Yeah.
But
let's just abduct Dom Brown and just do that.
Sold. But he is my Mitre of the Week. Waffles, who is your Mitre of the Week?
My Mitre of the Week is Dellin Betances.
Aha.
He looked awful. And not in the whole, like, it's the first game of spring training awful, but, like, he was continuing to fall off the mound when he pitches, and he was so wild. I felt so bad for Gary Sanchez, who was trying to catch his pitches that were 6 inches away from the plate, and he just looked bad. It does not inspire a lot of confidence that he is our, you know, second highest prospect.
That might go down soon if he continues like this. But I actually thought you were getting into, you know, how he looked, but, you know, that's just what I think of you.
Thanks.
No problem. Duggan, your Mitre of the Week.
I'm going to go with the always spunky Eduardo Nunez.
Yes, he is spunky, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the Yankees do need him to take a step forward this year and be a little more patient at the plate and be a little more consistent on defense. And he was hacking away in his first game and booted one in the field. So, I mean, it's one game, and it's certainly not damning by any means, but they would like him to be better than he showed.
Yeah, you know, with these Mitres of the Week, our first Mitres of the Week, I just really love saying Mitres of the Week, by the way. It's harder to get an accurate one just because we've only really seen two or three games, so, you know, we're just doing this for the weekend games. Like, next week's Mitre of the Week, you know, we'll have a whole week of playoff game, you know, spring training games, well, playoffs.
We'll have a full, like, 10 plate appearances to judge them on.
Yes. Which I'm looking forward to judging them.
Oh, yeah.
That's what this podcast is all about. Judgment.
Judgment. Can I?
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Can I include two honorable mention Yankees of the Week?
Sure, of course you can. Well, no, I guess not. Duggan says no. And he is a lord.
Zoilo Almonte and Cole Garner, they were both really impressive. I didn't expect anything out of either one of them. And in the game against South Florida, Almonte had 4 RBIs, and then he had 2 RBIs in the first game against the Phillies.
Yeah.
And then Cole Garner had a double and a home run in the same game.
Yeah, he looked great out there. And again, fantastic name.
So I think that they deserve honorable mentions.
Cesar Cabral could possibly be an honorable mention for me.
Yeah, he looked good.
Yeah.
For honorable mention Mitre of the Week, I would say Michael O'Connor, who was the lefty who pitched the 9th inning of the first spring training game and allowed 3 runs.
Yeah, just couldn't end that game. My honorable Mitre of the Week. Honorable Mitre of the Week. Nice. We'll probably go to Colin Curtis. Thin white CC just, you know, looked lost out there. And it could have been the wind, but again, that clear error that was not charge an error, that just looks sloppy.
Yeah, he didn't look very good either.
No. Anyone from you, Duggan?
No, I think you got everything about covered.
Alright. Well, I guess the final segment is what games are we looking forward to seeing this week? I'll just be right honest. You know, I'm looking forward to the game today, Monday, with the Pineda pitching. I think a lot of people are going to be looking with that with high expectations.
Yes. I'm really excited to see Pineda pitch.
Duncan, any games?
Definitely me as well. Yeah. I like to see everybody. I think Phil Hughes is another one that I really want to see how he starts out the year.
I really
see if people are blowing smoke about him being in better shape and pitching faster and all of that. See how he actually looks.
Speaking of in shape, I forgot to mention one thing. What did you think of Freddy Garcia out there today? Waffles?
He's fat.
All right. Right to this shallow judgment. No, but he does look fat. And I think we're just seeing a lot of what we saw from Garcia last year.
He got lit pretty badly in the first inning. I mean, he definitely left some fastballs up. But he also threw a pretty good number of good splitters, and he really dragged it in the second inning. And I feel like he threw a lot of fastballs in the first inning, and he doesn't really do that. You know, last year he threw fastballs an incredibly low percentage of the time and just worked with a lot of off-speed slop, and I feel like if you throw a lot of fastballs and he doesn't have a particularly good one, then he may have just been working on that or just trying to establish that for spring training. But he looked a lot better in the second inning. So
yeah,
they did smack around a couple of bad fastballs, but I wouldn't read a ton into that.
All right, I trust your judgment. I'm sick. So all right. Anything else we want to bring up? Anything at all?
Well, the list of injuries is kind of starting to pile up a little bit.
Oh yes, the injury report. Let's see how it's going, Waffles.
Austin Roman's back is still bad.
Yeah, pretty much nixed any chance he had of making the backup catcher role, which I didn't think was going to happen anyway. But
yeah, he definitely should have never really been in contention for that, but they're now saying he might not get into games until the end of spring training, maybe.
That's too bad.
He's on the shelf for a while.
That's too bad. Who else?
Russell Branyan's back was also kind of messed up, but he's day-to-day, so that sounds like he might be able to play relatively soon.
That's good.
Cole Garner, his hamstring is bothering him, so he won't be playing today. But again, it doesn't sound very serious. George Contos, he hurt his oblique like a week ago, two weeks ago.
The dreaded oblique.
And he's starting to play catch, so he's kind of on the mend from that and sounds like he might be able to get into a game pretty soon.
Oh, that's good.
How's Jabba doing? Either of you guys know?
He threw off of a regular mound the other day.
Oh, that's pretty good, though.
Yeah, that's encouraging.
I think it was like 15 or 30 pitches. So.
Is Feliciano, Feliciano still injured?
Oh, yeah. He's out for the season.
Wow.
Again.
He's injured forever.
He will have collected his entire Yankee paycheck without throwing a pitch.
Impressive. I give him credit then.
He's the perennial Mitre of the week.
Which
he had the year.
He had a chance to pitch, if I remember correctly, because they told him that he needed the surgery. And he decided to go rehab for a while, thinking that he could keep from having the surgery. And then so he like wasted all this time rehabbing. And they were like, you still need the surgery.
Speaking of injury reports, that's one thing I wanted to bring up. Ike Davis. I really hope that is not as serious. I mean, they're saying it's actually not that serious, but when you read up on Valley Fever and how it can ruin a year or possibly a career, that's just frightening to hear. And I really hope that it winds up just being like something minor where he can still play.
Can he get traded from the Mets so that these disasters can stop happening to him?
I know. Get him out of there. Like that. I just gotta know, when will it end for the Mets? I mean, they're just not catching any breaks.
Is their medical staff, like, entirely incompetent, or just mostly incompetent?
Those tweets, that series of tweets that came out against the Mets staff was kind of alarming.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Adam Rubin.
Adam Rubin.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, like, fans on Mason Avenue, a lot of them have been saying that for years. Like, their medical system is so inadequate, and from the looks of it, it really is. I mean, you look at what happened to Ike Davis last year. You know, a simple ankle injury turned out to be a year-ending injury. Because it was misdiagnosed.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was supposed to be, what, a severely sprained ankle, and then it turned into
fracture, I think.
Yeah.
But I think the original estimate was, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, something like that, and then he ended up missing, what, like 3 months?
Yeah.
The last 3 months of the season, something like that.
He missed the whole season. I mean, I think it happened in May, and yeah, he never played again that year. That's just sad. Because he's like one of the Mets' promising young stars.
He's a great hitter.
Yeah. Great fielder, too. I mean, he makes some incredible catches. I said he could possibly be the next, like, superstar first baseman, and it just doesn't seem like that's possible on the Mets right now.
Yeah.
But, alright. Well, since my head is pounding, I think I'm going to end this podcast. Yeah, sorry I can't talk longer, but I don't think Waffles and Duggan have anything else to say, unless they want to start reciting some poetry.
I think I'm good.
I really never have anything to say.
That's true. You're kind of useless.
True.
So, for What Would Jeter Do and Lord Duggan, I'm giving you a raise. Thanks for listening, and go Yankees.